Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
I've been a long-time fan of the show, so a little bit starstruck, but yeah, thanks, guys.
People get starstruck from us?
Now, one thing we didn't do is ask him if he would ever come on the show again, so perhaps we should do that. I wouldn't mind city-states doing that. I don't think they would ever accomplish much, but it would be amusing.
Well, in earlier versions of the game, like, city-states would actually capture other cities, and they would keep them, and they would hold them. I remember having a game where there was where one city-state had actually conquered an entire continent of other city-states. So it was all just one big city-state.
They still do that. If you're allied with somebody, they will.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on what's in the city and other stuff like that. Obviously, all the ones that they're not allowed to destroy will be kept. But, yeah, some of the other ones they'll try and get rid of rather than keep. But they do keep them. And so, yeah, you can still get that city-state that takes over the continent if you properly give it the extra benefits and stuff like that.
You know what I wish they would add is a hotkey to toggle the auto-end turn. That drives me crazy.
You can just turn it off, right?
Yeah, but you have to go into the menu and then turn it on, and then someone declares war, and you lose two turns trying to go back in the menu and turn it off. Or the alternative is spacebar enter. And it's just annoying to me. I wish I could just toggle it off and on.
Well, I'm all for hotkeys. You know that.
Yeah, they skimped on those in Civ 5 too, no?
Yes.
I remember in Civilization Revolution, if there was no action required on the part of the player, it would just, by default, I don't even know if there was a way that you could actually stop this, because there are times, no, I actually want to do something with my city in between these turns, I'm building the warrior, ah, crap. But I like that I don't have to sit there and click and turn and turn and turn and turn. Even with Brave New World adding more to the mid to late game, there's still going to be times where it's going to be and turn and turn, and I kind of like that feature.
A composite show, archive segments from previous episodes that got cut due to time.
Recorded for episode 180 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, and Mad Jin.
It would be more interesting, I think, if there was a gold cost associated to some of these things. That way you don't just, you know, layer on proposal after proposal, like both arts funding and science funding. If you add up extra gold cost for that, that would be pretty good, and it might force players in a multiplayer game anyways to want to repeal things a little bit more. I'd say AIs, but they get gold bonuses, so it doesn't really matter to them.
When you say a gold cost, imagine, do you mean like a gold cost in order to maintain a resolution over time or an upfront cost or what?
No, maintain over time. Make each resolution that passes cost 2 to 3 or 4 gold per turn for every single civ.
You could bankrupt people and just like have enough gold yourself.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There is so much gold in the system now, especially with the trade routes, that it would be a nice little gold sink for the late game. Because the way that the resolutions happen is that you have to wait a period of time before you can actually vote on the resolutions. And the first one in the Renaissance kicks off at about 30 to 40 turns. As the World Congress goes up in eras, and the World Congress goes up in eras based on average technological era of the entire world. So as that goes up through the eras, so too does the World Congress. And as you go, it speeds up to the point where in the atomic era, it's every 10 turns. So you're not going to get that many resolutions done early in the game, if any at all, especially on DD. Usually the first resolution gets proposed, and then everybody gets into the industrial era, and it speeds up already by the time it gets to a vote. As things speed up, it costs more. Why not?
I'd be fine with that, so long as the gold cost was being incurred by those who proposed and otherwise supported the project.
No, you can't vote against it. The UN makes everybody pay, not just those who like what it does.
You're already paying already if you decided, I want that to be defeated. It passed. Now I got to pay gold cost for it too? That just seems unnecessarily harsh.
It's called bureaucracy.
Seeing as you can't opt yourself out of Congress.
No, I don't think everybody should have to pay for that. The gold cost portion. No. Just the people who support it and post it.
And then no one ever votes again. Except for that one guy.
That'll make you think more about what it is that you're looking to propose or perhaps even want to try to repeal.
Yeah.
I want to repeal all these things you're suggesting because it's costing me too much.
Exactly. See? That would be useful diplomacy.
Civilization Online details. You will embark on a career, such as a scientist, a builder, a soldier, or a spy, to advance your society, but you can swap in between those roles. You can advance vertically through the ages, so a greater depth in a given character, as well as horizontally through new skills. However, leveling up is supposed to be easy and quick, quote-unquote, according to Jake Song, the executive producer on this from XL Games, because he does not want people to be grinding in order to do that. You can work with other people as citizens in the same civilization, kind of like Civ World in that respect, or you can work by yourselves, although Song calls this a big social experiment because, as was done anecdotally through Civilization World, as covered on the sibling show Civcast, where people could assume particular roles for different elements, be it war or economy, food, etc., nearly all items will either be player-made or purchased from a merchant in the world. Yes, auction houses and possibly what are described as personal storefronts are to be present within each civilization. War is to be between civilizations with varying types of combat, which includes gathering hundreds of people, so hundreds of real people, citizens represented in the game, to attack a city of another civilization, two, yes, one versus one, so maybe you can have the slam attack from Extreme Diplomacy. April Fool's joke from a few years ago. If a player dies, they will respawn in front of their town hall. There is no corpse and no losing items.
Zah.
But you do have to trap back to where you were. Diplomacy is to be accomplished through chat. There is to be a defined end to the world, so like Civilization World, where there was a defined end to a particular game, where one civilization will win if one of the possible victory conditions are met, which are to include creating space travel, quote-unquote creating, quote-unquote reaching the modern age, or conquering, quote-unquote, most of the world, which, of course, there's ambiguity in there, especially most of the world. If you think about the difference between domination win in Civilization 4 and Civilization 5, you can gain an appreciation of how much you could read or not read into that. It is implied that more than one world can be running at a given time. Money, items, and clothing will reset in between games, but other aspects of a character will persist to start another game. It's just those aspects haven't been decided yet. What is Cid's involvement, if any? It has been limited to a meeting at the beginning of the development where he reviewed and offered what is described as a general approval of the overall design and nothing since.
Free-to-play is always questionable. World of Warcraft is free-to-play, as long as you pay them a monthly subscription to use their network. But you can play the game for free.
We all want more details. I mean, conquering most of the world, I kind of already addressed that. But they've already talked about that you can either make stuff or you can purchase stuff from merchants in the game. And they actually mentioned the word auction house, and I think why.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, what, the way they were talking about it in the article, they know the, you know, go beat somebody else up isn't really a thing for everybody. And especially in the RPG slash whatever worlds, there's always people, especially in like WoW and stuff like that, they're just more interested in building things or becoming a trade or something. So that actually lets them be part of the Civ game so that they can hang out, say, become a really big good builder and make things for other people, et cetera, et cetera. So there could very well just be this Diablo 3 style. Yeah, no problem. It's free to play, but if you try and sell something or you want something, you're going to have to pay for it. And now it's a pay to get good stuff, and only people who pay will have good stuff. Unless, of course, you're able to build stuff and sell it. And, of course, they'll probably take a chunk of the sale price from that as well.
Yeah, that's always the sticky bits with free-to-play thing. But the whole concept thing, especially with the cycling thing, reminds me of a different MMO I played for a while called The Tale in the Desert, where it was kind of just focused on the Egyptian pyramid building type of era. But you had the things where, like, people would be building a big project like a pyramid or a monument, and everybody could contribute resources to it. You know, and then there was a whole, in that game even had a tech tree you had to progress through to get the kind of materials you needed. I mean, you don't just walk out the desert the first day they started one of the cycles of the game and start making limestone blocks for a pyramid.
Yeah.
Well, it does talk about in Civilization Online that there's supposed to be 4 civilizations at launch, seemingly implied that there could be more. There's a random resource distribution throughout the world. So it could very well be that, hey, would you like to build this? Well, you've got a lot of quantity X, but guess what? You need some of quantity Y, so unless you think you're going to be able to go and get it by force, you might want to trade for it, or you might, in fact, need to trade for it. So one way or the other, it's like combined arms in warfare, right? You can't just use the one thing to get anything and everything that you want.
Yeah, like in the real game, you may not get aluminum and you wanted to go for a space victory.
Well, that's what recycling centers are for.
Do we get to build those in Civilization Online?
But I do like the notion that if people just want to be able to sit back and not engage in combat, or at the very least, the only warfare that would be involved with would be defensive purposes, because that certainly was possible, as is my understanding from Civilization World. But in CivRev, no. That's a really, really bad approach in CivRev. I'm just going to sit here and build. No. You can build your grave, I guess, but... anyway.
Build army.
Yeah, but that's a completely different thing, though.
I'm just using it as a means of comparison to Civilization other than on the PC that we have seen, because most of our audience will be, well, how does this compare to, quote-unquote, other civs that we have seen today? That's the only real reason I compare it to that.
Yeah. Well, seeing how it works will, in the end, take time and more info. But massively multiplayer online RPG, well, it'll be different.
The concepts that they've put forward so far sound interesting, but are they going to actually work when they get the game done?
Yeah, and will the social experiment part actually work?
Yeah, because someone's always going to want to be in charge, and not everybody's going to want to like that person in charge. And things I saw in that other thing I was talking about, same thing.
And the big overarching, you know, pro and cons, pro, not attached to Facebook.
Yay!
Con, Asia only, as far as we know. I was like, oh.
Yeah. Ew.
Quote, unquote. Hopefully that's just a launch thing. I mean, if that's what they're thinking, like, this is going to be Civilization massively multiplayer online. We'd like people to actually be able to log in. Not that we'd be mentioning other games at all, people having difficult logging in. If they're just kind of limiting it to Asia to start with, maybe that's why, because they want to see if it's going to work on that scale and then expand it to other regions of the world. It'd be nice if they explained that portion.
Well, I think that company that's developing it is a Korean company. So.
It is.
And the guy, Jake Song, was involved with Lineage, which is one of those grindy Korean MMOs. So.
Well, it's true, but I mean, Civilization Online, developed by Firaxis, it was an American company, but it wasn't, North America only at launch, guys.
It's different, though.
Yeah.
Korea and China and some of the other ones, their core gaming is more online stuff, and they definitely have better infrastructure for interweb networks than we have over here. Or even, frankly, going across the ocean is bad for games like that. That's why even StarCraft has different servers around the world, and you don't play Korea to Europe necessarily.
Unless you want some pain.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I get that. I'm just saying when they're saying that the only servers that are going to be available at the start are Asian.
Oh, yeah.
I understand that.
I mean, they're just going with what they know.
Asian company, their biggest built-in audience is going to be over there because they like the free-to-play and the online more than we do in the States.
I mean, yeah, they could go the extra mile to actually set up servers here to begin with, but it'll be made or broken in Asia for them because it's about their reputation and stuff. So if it works in Korea, it'll work over here, potentially. But if it dies in Korea, then it won't even show up here.
Yeah.
Just for the style of game, anyways.
Recorded for episode 182, the Dank U, Makalua, the me and team, Mad Jin, and Mathos.
City-states and declaration of war, what the hell? What's DOP?
Declaration of peace.
Ah, declaration of peace. Makes sense. Alcibiades on 2K states, so let's use the most recent podcast episode.
This was from late July, so he's actually referring to episode 178 when we had Phyraxians on the show.
to talk about Brave New World. I understand that the developers get the impression the city-state war-peace interaction is not a major concern for the player community. Now, since I think this is a small but major issue with the current game, I thought I'd bring it up here for discussion. So basically, what I'm talking about is the fact that you can DAO a city-state, then do whatever you want to do to them, and then force a peace treaty on them by the end of the turn, and then repeat the cycle over again. This allows for some pretty lame strategies like worker stealing without suffering a risk of losing units, attack city-state over and over to level up a unit, conquer city-states without ever risking losing units. Now, I know there are supposed to be a diplomatic downside to these things, but the fact that the worker stealing is considered an almost default strategy on a higher level does indicate these things could need some fine-tuning. Furthermore, as I see it, there's a very easy fix to this, namely at a cooldown time for DAO and for city-states, similar to how it works for major civs. So when you make a DAO with a city-state, they won't accept a peace offer before some time, like 5 turns have gone by. Similarly, when you sign a peace treaty, you can't declare war on the city-state for some time, again 5 turns is a possibility. So please let your voice and vote be heard on the matter. Now, there's been 9 votes on this, and all nine votes...
All nine?
Yeah, all nine votes agree that this is a problem, and a cooldown time sounds like a good solution. The other ones, the agree this is a problem, but think we need another solution, or no, this is not a problem, got exactly no votes.
Oh, wait. Wait. Nope.
Do what?
Did you just vote?
Yeah.
There's 2 votes now. There's a total of 11 votes. Oh. Now, personally, I don't do this. To me, it's always been cheesy, the worker stealing and this stuff, so I don't even bother to do it. I just leave that be. But I do agree that something needs to be done, because this is kind of cheesy, in my opinion.
Well, since Majin said that he voted in the poll, I'm curious, were you the 10th vote for yes, or were you the 1 vote for no?
Take a guess. 50-50 chance.
Oh, I don't like those odds.
It's probably 75-25.
But we like worker stealing auto P.
0%.
Yeah, if I were to cast a ballot, I would go in the yes category. And actually, I like the cooldown suggestion. When Civ 5 first came out, there was, of course, that if you declared war on too many city-states, then it would be permanent war, rawr. And I was like, whoa, hey now. And now it seems kind of like we got another extreme situation going on here. And I know we're really good at extremes because that's humanity. But
yeah, it's like if Dan can run around and bully every city-state, why don't they declare a permanent war on him?
Yeah, all city-states, yeah. Form up.
Everyone declare war on Dan.
Exactly.
Actually, just as an aside, it's kind of even worse than that because there are situations where you can bully the city-state and then give them gold back right away and you have more influence with them than when you did before you bullied them. I said this before Brave New World came out and nobody listened to me. Oh, well.
I said it many times. I mean, people complain that my LPs sometimes have worker steals. They're like, oh, your worker stealing. That's it's not.
Worker steals not, OP. No, it's not. Yeah.
Well, actually, they were saying it's an abuse. Be an abuser.
Playing the game is an abuse.
It's abusive. Fine. Let's program the AI to do that more from city-states, and then we're on the same playing field.
AIs wipe out city-states all the time.
Hey, I'm talking about the worker steal.
Worker stealings, though, do have diplo penalties. And I have, in the last number of games for LPs, not even bothered stealing a worker. And it doesn't really change the game outcome. You know, stealing the worker makes it faster, but you also get the diplo penalty with everybody, so either way it doesn't matter. But should you be able to declare war, make peace, declare war, make peace, declare war, make peace, all on the same turn, because you can do it multiple times on a single turn.
Indeed. With the same city-state or with multiple, yeah.
The thing is that the more times you declare war in a city-state, the faster the city-states start to hate you, and the sooner that you get shoved down. And, of course, major civs will start to hate you really quickly. So you tend not to do it to more than one, because the first one's basically free. If you do it to more than one city-state, then
you can get away with 2, but after that, they start side-eyeing you really hard.
Yeah,
it's, the warmonger penalty you get is greater than the, oh, now your resting influence is down by 20. Okay, it's a hit, but it's the warmongering thing, especially if AI then decides, okay, you are now the target because you've been doing that.
Yeah.
And they're a threat.
Yeah.
Empty threats, well, you know.
Empty threats are empty. But should something like that change? Yeah. The declare war or make peace on the same turn thing, that's more for a little bit later when you're trying to take out the city-state. If they actually have a military, I mean, all you have to do is bring a bunch of units in, declare war, shoot them up. If they still have units left, or if, you know, you don't want the city attacking your units, make peace. Next turn comes by, declare war, shoot, make peace, and you take no damage. It's like, that is horrifyingly bad.
Yeah, so, yes, questionable.
That's not questionable. That's just broken.
Monthar says in the chat, even if you just weren't allowed to make peace until the next turn and not to be able to declare again until the next turn after peace, it would be better. Yes, it would be better. I don't think that goes far enough.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I would take better at this point.
I would take anything better at this point, but yeah, that's not far enough. The five turn between peace and war, I'd be okay with that. I'd probably prefer it to act like matrices, so it's more consistent. So there's a minimum, I think, of 6 turns after you declare war with a major civ that you have to wait before you can make peace. And then there's the 10-turn peace treaty after you made peace before you can declare war again. I'd be probably better with that because at least it's more consistent. For the worker steel, there's lots of different ways to fix that. Just have them build a unit first or give them a unit like everybody else starts with starting units, except for city states. Blocking worker stealing is not necessarily going to happen here because, ooh, I stole your worker. Now I have to wait 5 turns for peace. Well, you know, in that 5 turns, I've walked away with your worker because you don't have a unit to stop me. Oh, noes. We're still at war, but you have no units. So I'll just take this 5 turn wait, and then we'll make peace again.
Sounds good to me. Put a stamp on it. Fixed.
Alrighty then. If you're attacking city-state over and over to level up a unit, you're actually going to stay at war. So you declare war, leave units there, let the city bombard it, and you never actually make peace. You just leave that war going permanently.
The leveling up, okay, it's an issue, but I don't consider it to be that critical.
Yeah, you kind of have to purposely leave units somewhere to take a while to level up. And
when they could be doing something else, yeah. More productive.
Maybe. Munther does say, well, you know, of course, if when they do address this, folks will just wait for barbs to go steal the worker and then take it from the barbs. Well, you can do that now. Just troll around, look for city states that have a barb camp next to them, and that barb camp will very quickly have a worker waiting for it.
I think what it may mean is that barbarians will be able to get more workers because we stopped taking them. That might be about it.
And not to mention, if you wait for the barbs to steal the worker for you, you will get extra influence. Well, no penalty, and you might even get extra influence for killing the barb camp.
Yeah. And then you could even return the worker if you wanted to get more influence.
Yay! If you want it.
Do you want instant ally status on turn 10?
Maybe. I don't know. If they're hostile, it's not worth it.
Yeah, there is that. But free influence is free influence. Free is free.
Rob CO4 started a thread about long-term relationships with city-states should be rewarded. He says, Civ 5 has the city-state relationship mechanic backwards, in my opinion. If a player becomes an ally with the city-state, it should become easier to maintain the relationship. Long-term relationship building should be rewarded so city-states aren't things to be bought and lost at the drop of a hat. There are a couple of ways this could be achieved. One, actually have the relationship meter grow a little each turn once the Civ is allies with them. And two, have it be cheaper for an ally to buy more relationship points. Maybe add the option for civs to be able to lower the relationship of another civ with the city-state. Then multiple civs could gang up on another to buy down the relationship points. In any case, the main point is to reward long-term relationships that isn't nearly as beneficial to buy out a city-state at the last second to get their vote in the World Council.
Can I just say, first off, I think our strongest emotions are often the ones that are negative. And this part in the last paragraph, maybe the option for civs to be able to lower the relationship of another civ with a city-state, can we not go back to what the end of patronage used to be, please?
We've been there and done that, so what you're saying.
Oh, I was like, no, no. I just wanted to get that out of the way so I can get my anger out of the way and move on.
Yeah, of the two options he came up with there, I like two better. I think that would be easier for balancing. Because one, if somebody gets to somebody and meets them and happens to get a good quest first and their allies in like something BC, you're never going to unseat them if it keeps growing every turn.
You know, on one hand, when there was the suggestion, I don't think that was him, I think it was that Al C. Biad's vote, instead of having like a lump sum of gold, you have to give gold per turn to try to kind of avoid that, hey, boom, guess what, I just took your city-state ally from you. That's the change that we saw with quote-unquote civilization proper, and I think that worked well with civilization proper, but I think doing that with a city-state isn't a civilization, and I think if you did that with city-states, then you're going to have to start changing a number of other things very quickly. I think that works better maybe in the later game than it would in the earlier game.
Well, the same poster also had a good idea about their attitude changing over time. Like if somebody started out hostile, you could slowly shift them up to friendly if you were having good relations, or if somebody who is not, you know, your war with had gotten to them first, they would slowly go down to hostile. I think that would be a little bit better than the total random that we get now.
I could see you still have kind of the total random as a start.
Yeah.
but then it decided, okay, you're hostile, but I'm really, really going to get close to you. The only mercantile city-state on the map. Everyone loves a hostile mercantile city-state.
God.
Just like we used to love the hostile city-states, right? But you're like, it's the only one, so it's willing to put in that time and the effort to cultivate that long-term relationship where towards you, they're no longer hostile. Not, hey, I see that civilization over there is getting that mercantile city-state. Soon it will become neutral, maybe irrational, because they're kind of weirded out by how close they are.
I like this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. You want to get closer? No, okay, moving on.
We're all irrational.
Yes, we're all very irrational, that's true. So it wouldn't be that, hey, I'll just let, you know, Civilization X get them from hostile to friendly, and then I'll take advantage of that friendly. I don't think that's what he was getting at, but just to be clear, yes, I like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind some sort of mechanic that, in the long game, i.e. not something you can instant do, adjust people who are hostile to being more friendly, or at least neutral.
You can do that with the AI, why can't you do it with the city state?
Yeah, I think the point is that some city-states are going to be easy to maintain, others aren't. That's kind of the point, but eventually it doesn't really matter nearly as much. So it'd be interesting if you can mess with that mechanic. And I would agree that maybe being able to mess with it so that you make city-states that you have as allies more hostile towards other civs, mm-hmm. like your enemies. Your city-state allies that you've had as an ally for a long time become hostile towards your enemies that you've been at war with.
And if AI did try to do the last-minute buyout for the World Council thing, it would cost them a heck of a lot more.
Yeah, and you could probably even use the hostile, neutral, irrational, friendly, whatever levels as multipliers towards mm-hmm. gold costs. So a hostile city-state would actually have a multiplier of, say, 2 to the amount of gold required to buy up implements.
I'm laughing, sir, because Monther's saying in the chat, Dan would have all the city-states at hostile quickly.
Yeah.
This bullying of the city-states is something that as the game progresses, I actually do less and less. And this is a relationship that you would cultivate over an extended period of time. But at the same point, if I ever thought at some point I actually wanted to be friends with that particular city-state, I might actually think twice about bullying a city for gold just because I could take the gold.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a benefit. Kind of in the middle wedge on the issue of whether it should just be strictly gold per turn or have, you know, lump sum of gold up front that you can actually do. Alcibiades suggests that the gold quest option be the only time, so in that window, you know, over that 20 turns, that you could actually give a lump sum of gold. But also, combined with that, that the city-state is saying, I want X amount of gold. And so if you've got 1,500 gold that you would like to give them for that quest, but they're only looking for 500, as soon as you give them that 500, then that quest disappears, and you're not going to be able to gain any more influence above that 500. I like that. That might be getting a little too complicated, but I could see that working. As long as frequency at which that gold gift option came up, you know, wasn't that often, then it would kind of defeat the purpose of gold per turn or other actions other than, here, I'm going to give you a whole bunch of gold, be my friend or ally like right now. As kind of the complete opposite to this discussion, there was one person in this thread on 2K, Furiox, who said, I disagree that this is necessary. All of this discussion is necessary. And I think building long-term relationships is already being rewarded sufficiently. Just buying influence over a city-state doesn't exactly come free. The massive 1,000 gold for max influence will rarely be enough to push out of the player already allied with them, who's been fulfilling quests for them since the classical or even ancient era. And even with all this gold, you've still only bought allied status for perhaps 20 turns until you shower them with even more gold. Meanwhile, the player had already allied can drop his 250 gold and it will typically be enough to buy you right back out. If you're able to easily buy out city-states, you're playing on too low a difficulty. Try multiplayer and you'll realize that it's a wholly different matter and that this works just fine. My first reaction was, you still have city-states enabled in multiplayer?
Yeah, because they're extra little toys to take away.
Extremely random.
If you're already allied, then you can drop the 250 gold, and it'll typically be enough to buy you right back out. Do you want to be doing that every 2 or 3 turns?
Yeah, actually, you know what? You can drop your 250 gold. I'll just drop my level 1 spy in there and constantly flip the city. So you spend money to get back up to being ally. I'll just drop my spy in there and constantly flip you, because 250 gold does not buy you enough influence to get you far enough away for a level 1 spy to coup.
That means you don't have to go into space to find a black hole for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great black hole right there. Never spend 250 gold to get just over somebody, because even a rigging of an election will tend to bypass that.
Yeah, and if you know that it's honestly that another civilization has really sunk its teeth in and you see that there's constant election rigging, you may want to consider just how desirable keeping that city-state allied with you is.
Yeah.
Maybe there's another option closer to home.
Called killing it.
Or I was going to say, either you find another type of city-state to try to curry the favor of. Perhaps, yeah, just go take it.
I don't know. It's like I'm fulfilling quests for them ever since the classical and or even ancient era, and I'm using my spy to cue them constantly and, you know, rig elections constantly as you're spending a crazy amount of gold into it. All right, you spent too much gold. I don't really feel like keeping them anymore. Splat. Well, there goes 4,000 gold or whatever it took for you to get to it. You just made a big waste.
Monthar adds in the chat to the city-state disposition, the current cost, neutral plus 50% of the current cost, unfriendly 2 times the current cost, hostile 3 times the current cost, and irrational, random between friendly and hostile costs.
I think they should hit an irrational state, like in that the framework of what we were talking. They should hit the irrational state when there's multiple major civs trying to pull them towards friendly or push them towards hostile. So, yeah, if you have multiple cities, like so many major civs trying to push and pull the relationship, then maybe they'll eventually just flip to irrational and just say, you're all crazy.
And so am I, thanks to you.
Yay!
Recorded for episode 183 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Alpha Shard, and ECAT 2468.
Oh, look, it's another top 10 list. Guys, did you know Dan likes top 10 lists? Shadow Pick again has another list of 10 things you should do. In this case, it's 10 things you aren't doing, actually, in Brave New World, but you should. Number 10, this ought to be number 1, Pillage. Pillaging enemy improvements damages the improvement, making it unusable by the enemy. It also gives plus 25 health and some gold. AI will consider surrendering if you're devastating their territory.
How's he know that they're not doing this?
He may just be referring to newer players.
Mm-hmm. Well, he does say new players, so yeah, I guess.
Yeah, but it took me all 5 seconds to find out how awesome pillaging was when I first started Civ 5.
Free money and free health.
Yeah, if you're a new player, you're not going to know how awesome it is unless you read about it beforehand or you actually try it.
That's what I did. I did it, and it was
but
like,
who wouldn't try it? I mean, come on.
Or you've got that mindset, oh, I don't want to damage things. I'm going to take the city any minute now. So we all agree. Pillage. Awesomeness.
Yes.
Speaking of agreeing.
Number 9. Use great generals to create citadels. The AI cannot figure out how to take out a citadel and waste endless units on it. And a unit ending its turn on or adjacent to a citadel automatically takes negative 30 damage. You don't need to have any units stationed inside for this benefit. However, it's worth having a unit that can absorb some punishment because the zones of control will mean any enemy moving through the area will end more turns on or near the citadel. Citadel also, and this is the best part, steals territory, so it's fun to rob an AI when they spawn near you of their precious luxuries. Oh, I'm sorry. Was this Jen's years? Yoink! And by the way, for the new players, they do notice that you're doing that and get mad about it. Citadel's good. Especially when you get a really pesky city that has high defense and you can just plop it pretty close and just, well, I'm going to bomb your city and you can stand with the citadel, thanks. Let's see. Number 8. Open tradition, liberty, and honor. The opener for all 3 policies gives you culture, which you need to get even more policies. Additionally, each make a wonder available to build. If you haven't been playing Brave New World, you may have missed the fact that some of the wonders got moved to the policies, and you go, but why can't I build the pyramids? Well, you didn't go liberty. Don't bother going down a single policy path until you've opened all 3. I don't know about that part.
Yes to tradition and liberty, but honor?
Yeah, all 3 of them. I could see grabbing starter tradition to get that plus 3 culture, because that is a lot in the early game, and then going up liberty, seeing if the settlers, but honor on top of that? Maybe tradition and honor, or tradition and...
Yeah, or liberty and honor, but all 3? No.
Yeah, that seems
plays
to be
with raising barbarians. Yeah, there
well,
we go.
Yeah,
it says it in the last sentence.
Yeah.
This guy must like raging barbarians.
Yeah, it's in the open. It'll open the other policies faster if you go tradition versus. Well, yeah, but if you try to go up too many trees at once, you're just going to be spread out, and the policy cost is going to keep going up.
Yeah, jack of all trades, master of none.
I think you should take all of the honor policies first before you consider anything else, because honor is the greatest thing ever.
Phil, we heard you 2 years ago.
Right. Back then it was actually true, though. But I still like the concept, of course.
Yeah, I think with Raiding Barbarians, honor over can outshine liberty and culture production. still isn't quite outshine tradition. It's useful, though, to get the opening. You know, once you've gotten a few policies that you need in the other chain, and then just taking the opening of honor so you get the bonus against the barbs, because even without raging barbs, you're still going to get a lot of barbs.
That's tough, though, because, like, you're going to have a few units just so you can stay alive anyway. And it's not that hard to fight off barbarians at that point. At least, you know, you're paying quite a bit for taking a social policy that's doing very little else.
Well, yeah, I guess it's a situational thing. If you've ended up near an AI, you know you're going to have to end up fighting at some point, like you're next to Genghis, you might as well grab it.
I thought you meant the barbarians as in, like, the literal sense, but okay.
Yeah, there are kinds of barbarians at the case, too. All right, 7, build an archer. Top 3 city with an archer can usually hold off an AI invasion force of 3 warriors and 3 archers. Game is highly skewed towards defense in the early game, making warfare a losing proposition for attackers.
Who's not building archers?
Or just build something else and buy one.
You must mean really new players.
Very new players.
Although, you're not going to eat an AI invasion force of 3 warriors and 3 archers as a new player on a low difficulty in any foreseeable early game time frames.
I have saved my city once before having a composite bow in there when I got attacked, but that's a little bit later in the tree, but still.
Yeah.
True. Well, you can have the archer and then upgrade to the composite bow.
Yep.
Although that does require 8 gold, and if you're having difficulty with production and can't get your trade routes up pretty quickly, even 80 gold can be hard to come by.
Well, true, but of gold, hopefully you get like an excess luxury that you can trade for some gold per turn. I also like selling my embassies to AIs for 1 gold per turn. That is pretty sweet.
That's awesome.
Give me money.
Especially if you meet like 3 or 4, right? You know, on the same continent. Ooh, +3, +4 gold per turn for, you know, the next 25 turns. Yes.
The problem is you have to give them that gold per turn back eventually.
No, not necessarily. I'll just go ahead and find your capital. Therefore, I quote-unquote have found your city. Okay, so I don't have an embassy in there. But even if I do then have to pay for your embassy later, I've had use of that gold earlier on when I needed it, and now the cost that I'm going to spend in order to get your embassy...
He's
going to
save money.
Yeah.
So, 6, open patronage and open consulates and promise to protect every city-state. Yeah, you know, you don't need to do the first 2 parts of this. You can just skip to 3, promise to protect every city-state. Because that's 2 social policies. Ouch. Early game, ouch.
Yeah, that is.
Agree with Mackie. Not agree with the suggestion, agree with Mackie.
And he's saying that this is required if you have Venice, Greece, and or Austria on the game. You don't want them to win an early diplomatic victory. You know, just protecting the city-states is fine. You don't have to go up the patronage tree to stop them from that. Because there's these things called pointy sticks you can stop them with.
Yeah, now, if you're playing as one of these civilizations...
Then you would probably be going up patronage anyway.
If you're going diplomatic
victory...
They're
not
going
to win that early with a diplomatic victory.
No. This is far too circumstantial as, like, a suitable general recommendation.
Yeah. It depends on the composition of city-states in the area. Like, if you've got a lot of mercantile city-states, then I can see an argument for this.
Yeah.
All right, 5. Build a scout is your first build.
LOL.
No. We already had this discussion about monuments and shrines. Maybe you could squeeze the scout in between the monument and the shrine, because you're only going to lose, on quick speed, it's only losing like 4 turns to get that in there. So it's only 4 turns worth of faith, which is only going to be like +1 in the beginning anyway. So he's saying the scouts with honor open a great barbarian killer at the beginning of the game. I'm not so sure about that.
I disagree with Master Shoshone.
It's about the only exception there, because you can get all sorts of things, because you can turn those scouts into composite bows very quickly.
Building a scout actually as your first build, to me, unless you know you're like on a small landmass, and if you're going traditions, then yes, go ahead and build a scout first. That is actually what I usually do.
Especially because it's hard to get past those culture borders if you're playing a high difficulty and you wait too long on the scout.
Now, I will also say that if you turn ruins off, then the desirability of building a scout first, I mean, there's still a desirability to build a scout to, you know,
scout,
have a lay of the land. But especially with ruins on, yes, build a scout as your first build. I will agree with that. I won't strongly agree with that, because to me, you really should be going tradition then. Otherwise, you should be investing in that monument. Even if you don't finish the monument before you interrupt it to, say, construct the shrine, because maybe, hey, from a ruin, guess what? I get a free technology. Woohoo, I got pottery. Okay, let's switch.
And even if the war is too slow and you're not going to beat the Achaeans, hey, at least you know where you're going to put your settlers. Number four, use internal trade routes. The food and production hammers generated by an internal trade route are bonuses. They don't take away any food or production from the city of origin. It's counterintuitive, and most players don't realize it. Yeah, it's like magic food from nowhere. But this is a trade-off in the early game. Do you want the money from trade routes to other civs or city-states, or do you want this bonus? Depends on what you're going to do.
Also, potentially, the science that you can gain.
Yes, yeah. Other AI players or other human players or multiplayer, you can get some science.
A little later on, you want your religion to spread, then you can also apply more religious pressure with external routes. So I think you got to balance internal routes with trade routes. He doesn't say use only internal trade routes, in which case I would rage on this.
Yes, it's try to use them full stop.
A combination of them. Now, I think overall, I have more external trade routes, like more of them, and for a longer period of times than internal. But yes, there are times you want to remember to use the internal trade routes, and the food is beneficial, obviously, particularly if you're going tall versus wide.
To either boost the population or boost the production really quickly early on, you know, then you can switch them out for external ones. Because sometimes when you start, you don't really have a good external trade route. You're too far away until you get a couple of cities down.
That and, oh, they're going to be pillaged really quickly by these things called barbarians.
Yeah.
Easier to protect internal trade routes than external ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you're doing a one-city challenge, then...
What internal trade routes?
The capital will trade with itself. What?
Magic food from nowhere.
Now that would be efficient.
Okay, number three. It's better to be broke than be unhappy. Falling into the red with negative gold, which will pull science, but it won't cripple you. I want to argue that pulling science at all is crippling you.
Absolute statement, absolutely problematic.
Yes.
I think this depends on what stage of the game. Like, I think going on broke is better in the late game because you'll be able to recover from it probably pretty quickly. Percent values in the late game when all the numbers are much higher are going to be more painful than they are in the early game when you've got low numbers for those percent values left behind, too.
Yeah, I understand the part about going into the negative happiness is bad for your city growth and also bad if you get into a war. But if you're not generating any science because you're perpetually broke, you're in even a worse spot.
It generally is easier to, like, correct income difficulties in the moment.
Mm.
Not necessarily disbanding a unit, but say go to your more gold-producing cities and switch that focus to gold, which, by the way, if you're also having a happiness problem, then if you're getting more gold, then maybe you can go ahead and buy some happiness buildings that you hopefully haven't built somewhere, so then that too can also help with the production. But yeah, like unhappiness levels of 1 to 9 is not always a concern, even if you're not at war, because perhaps you want to find kind of a passive way to slow down your growth.
You can actually grow too fast.
Because that can actually be helpful. And the production hit, if it's not too bad, 1 to 9, I think the war thing now is the bigger concern because certainly it was before Brave New World, you'd only have that hit if you got the 10. Whereas now, even if you're at 1 unhappy...
Yeah, I think it's like 10% per unhappy going up to being really bad at 10.
But even at that same time, depending upon the combat penalty in this situation, like if you happen to have a great general, okay, it's going to give you plus 15%. If you're like one or two unhappy, then it's not going to be as good because the great general is offsetting that. But to say that it's better to be broke than unhappy, there's being broke and then there's being broke. How much you're broke and how long you're broke, especially the long portion. Because even if you're not getting units disbanded, if you're getting that science hit...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Then,
if you're 10 gold under or something for a few turns right before you declare war on an AI and you're about to refill your coffers, that's one thing. If you somehow dug yourself in the hole where you're perpetually at 10 and there's no way to get it back, you're in trouble. All sorts of trouble.
Now, if you're at 20 unhappy, well...
You're also in all sorts of trouble.
You probably are better off being broke than 20 unhappy.
Yeah. At that point, if you're 20 unhappy, you're better off starting over the game.
You don't want those rebels coming up.
Yeah, it's like you're 20 unhappy. What, are you still affected by the auto-annex bug? Short of that happening to you, then I don't know why this is happening to you is the problem. There's something wrong here.
Since we're already talking about cities, number two, sell minor conquested cities to the AI. What?
No, I got to disagree with this.
Yeah. There are some potential abuses you can set up with it, though. Like, if you start triggering border tensions strategically, you can pretty much start wars all over the place.
It's true, but
it's something you can consider. I don't think it's something you should always do in general.
Yeah,
but
that's very situational.
Certainly, if you can get something for it and get the AI into a war put together,
for a city that's pretty much junk. Yeah.
If it's a junk city in the center, I can kind of understand that. Gives it to two AIs that are already in tension with each other and get them to start fighting each other, which he mentions there underneath that. So I can see that one. But he's talking about the rubbish after a conquest. The people are unhappy. The best buildings have been destroyed. And you only have to invest some gold into making it viable. It's just your empire. Well, that's why you went to war.
So, yeah, I can see a case for it if you're minus 20 unhappy and you need to get rid of something.
Mm. Yeah.
If it's a bad city, then I'm going to burn it. You know, I don't give cities over to AI because that would make them more powerful, even if it's, you know, it would have to be
they
the
have a bunch
city.
Of bonuses to yeah. improve it.
Yeah, like an ice city or something.
Yeah. The crap tundra ice cities, yes. We definitely burn those. They put it one off the river when they should have put it on the river, and we're burning that too.
And you don't have to make up your mind the moment you capture the city whether or not you want to raise it or not. You can do that later.
Come back at any time. Burn.
And I think it's also important to remember on this point, he's also set up this list targeting new players. And I think that this as a tactic, given how circumstantial it is, I don't really think we want to introduce this notion to newer players. They've got enough to deal with.
You know what you could do is you could just keep taking these cities over and over again and selling them to the next AI while you flatten them.
It also should be remembered that since each of these cities AIs tech cost by 5%, selling them to a runaway AI will ramp up their tech cost. And if it's like one of those ice cities, it's not going to make up for itself.
Ice city.
Interesting. I think a lot of cities that have absolutely nothing in their borders, like no food bonuses, no luxuries, no strategic resources, those cities are pretty questionable. I think you can get away with selling those, too.
One more thing about cities, the number one thing on the list, which, as we said, pillage ought to be number one, but liberate crap cities and annex capitals. Okay, the second half, yes. The first half, what? Is he saying that bringing city-states and dead civs back to life often gives you an ally for the rest of the game, but always keep a capital for yourself. This is true.
Bringing dead civs back to life often gives you an ally for the rest of the game. Do you think if you bring a dead civ back to life, they're going to last the rest of the game?
Yeah. They got steamrolled over once and it wasn't you.
I mean, if there's a city-state that you want to liberate because you'd like to have an ally for yourself and you can think you can reasonably keep it as an ally, okay, but that's also very situational.
Well, if that dead civ gets rolled over by the AI, that's warmonger penalties for that AI with other AIs.
Yes, and they can get penalties for destroying them all over again the second time they destroy them.
If you liberate a city, particularly if you're bringing a civilization back to life, but not necessarily, if you then want to do that because then they're going to be your friend and you can protect them, they're going to be your ally, and they can help you out with, say, some World Congress votes?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Then, okay, now I see a benefit to doing that. You liberate them, and then you get open borders with them, and then if anybody even thinks about trying to take the city, just place your units all around where their city could be taken, and therefore, de facto, you've protected them from being destroyed. Again.
And some joker in the first post after decided to add a zero. Play list and do more productive stuff. What?
Forget who it was, but later in the thread was like, oh, that ship sailed a long time ago. Look at what we're talking about.
You thought to come to the forums too late.
It's too late. You're interested in Civ Everything.
Mm-hmm.
Blooper reel. Here are outtakes cut from earlier episodes this season due to time.
And somebody's beeping me, even though I'm on poly.
I'm on a boat.
Or when you're not on a boat. I can't whistle. I really shouldn't have tried that. Trying to do that, yeah, total fail.
Hey, if the AI, if I fool them once, shame on them. But, you know, if I fool them more than, no, sorry, fool them once, I'm screwing this up.
You don't know your thing.
Fool them once, shame on me. Fool them twice, it's an exploit. If he can get at the gates,
consisting of financial losses, game closures, and
somebody is listening to something, and it was Dan. It was Dan's voice.
Dan missed the sound of his own voice.
That wasn't me, actually.
Somebody acts sufficiently differently.
I'm going to cut you off just for a second, Phil. Just because I don't know if it's just me, but you are roboting something.
Yeah, it's very robotic.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat.
I know you're trying to do like Mr. Roboto by sticks. You know.
are happening rather than just some simple stuff. Somebody's talking in the background or listening to something in the background.
Yeah.
You're seeing it as well in the point-and-click adventure, John.
Yeah, and I'm hearing that as well. Is that you, Robert?
Well, it's just about a point-and-click adventure.
I am here with Dan Q.
Today's our...
I'm sorry.
No.
You say the names, and then we say funny things.
Okay. I am here with... Yeah.
You have to name people. That's right.
Okay.
We're going to name ourselves. Are you kidding? And we are all peons to the next person we're going to talk about briefly. Not you, Maggie.
We are not peeing on that.
Peons.
I can't believe you just told people to do that.
I know people had worries that it was going to interrupt the one unit per turn, or per tile. The letter keeps going one unit per turn.
What do we know about Polynesia in terms of traits, unique abilities, etc.? Morocco, I've got them, but have no clue about Polynesia.
Oh, Indonesia, you mean?
Indonesia, yeah.
Oops. Is it Indonesia?
So, that was mine, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Brain. Investigation penalty.
You're welcome.
Okay, yeah, you have to wait for me to find a tab. I have too many tabs.
It's Saturday afternoon. Do you know where your Q&A is?
In the meantime, Dan will entertain you with an arousing dance.
No. Yeah, sorry, Internet. I'm fail this morning.
Hey, it's really tiring being the only woman on the Internet. We all understand.
It's a lot of work, I know.
Yeah, it's a lot of work putting up with you people.
Am I the youngin' here?
Long into the new Phil, which is unusual. Guess it's unusual for you, too.
Oh, you're younger than me? I always forget how old everyone is.
Let me troll your comment a little bit. If you were younger than Phil yesterday, you know you're still younger than him today, right?
You don't feel what I'm catching up.
When Lisa was around, there was
I'm so glad you gave to tell me these things.
Did the recording live up to your expectations? And hopefully your expectations were really low, so then your answer is yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm used to doing podcasts. So it's nothing new.
That just means I didn't troll hard enough.
Polycast's your latest fling. You see. You know what, Brad? I'll bet you if you gave us your best Pirates impression right now, Sid would do it.
I don't think he would.
Brad doesn't have a good Pirates impression. That's what he just admitted to indirectly.
It's true. My secret shame.
I'm tweeting it right now.
Now it's not secret.
It'll be picked up by literally next to nobody, but, you know. Yes, Civilization VI may be announced and released sometime before 2050.
Oh, I think you could round that down to 2020.
Yeah.
Because that's what hindsight is.
Fucking Kings was...
Says in the chat, Dan, you need a tighter leash on your guests. I assume that means leash, but I...
Leashes are too strong!
Why do you give me these names?
Okay, so Poland isn't... Bleh.
Speaking about worth building and trade routes.
What, engineering?
Yeah.
I was going to get to that. Jeez, you guys want to read these topics for me at this rate?
Once again, Madden feels like he doesn't say enough on this show.
I haven't said anything yet.
It's true, you had not said the word anything until that moment. You are correct, sir.
Exactly.
Oh, I got it. All right, we are ready to begin.
Cue.
Line.
Line.
Host, introduce thine self.
Oh, yeah, that's me. I was waiting for you guys to start.
Business as usual around here.
With Dan Q, Michael Lewis.
Good luck.
Whoa.
One at a time.
Oh, yeah. With Dan
Start
Q.
Again. Start again.
Okay. Greetings, everybody. Forget what we're doing.
Start again.
What's
up? Who else is here?
They'd be
be deep.
And then that takes us to the freedom. And to give us the rundown of those, how about you, Phil?
Unmuted.
I was about to say, do you remember your name?
Phil has left the building.
I don't want to interrupt. We can go on when we're ready.
Yeah, I can edit this in post so it sounds like Phil did a segue to proper time and didn't interrupt our guest. How rude.
Sorry.
It's a game about colonizing a small hexagonal island and harvesting a scanner. Hold on. There we go.
Are you admitting that there are more women on the internet than Mackie?
Well, obviously, they're all part of Mackie's personality.
You can only have one true one at a time, right? And so, Mackie is the current title holder.
When you're not speaking, just mute your microphone, just because I think in the last few minutes, the background noise from you has gotten more even when you're not doing anything. I don't know what that is.
I don't know what it is either.
Just because it's gotten really extreme in the last few minutes. It's nothing against you. It's something with your connection or your Skype settings or something. But I was having a hard time hearing Phil. And Phil's loud, so you know it's bad.
Yeah.
You got the last word in, Phil. Just this one.
Yay.
I blame Madgen for introducing you last. Go ahead, guest.
Yeah, you don't even have a name. You're just guest. Did we lose him?
What? No. Yeah, making the AI less like women.
Dot, dot, dot.
Mackie moans because she knows it's true.
You happened to you say that right as I took a sip of coffee, so I couldn't go, what the hell, Dan?
Well, fine.
Timing is everything. But yeah, extra everything doesn't help. Or it doesn't hurt.
Yeah, extra everything doesn't help. Take that.
Make up your mind.
You'll still lose. So if you, you know, have to buy 1,000 tiles, you can find out how many you have actually bought in the game so
boughten?
Far.
Yes.
Bought.
Did you just say bought?
I did.
And we'll have someone have a placeholder. Welcome for Mackie.
Hello, I'm Mackie.
Yes. All right, so, yeah, first topic.
Whoa, echo. Massive echo.
Really? From me?
It's gone now.
Okay, now it's gone. I was looking at the Civ side, or, well, yeah, the Civ side. Civ Fanatic.
Civ Fanatic? No other side. Right? Nope.
Yeah, no.
We have news for you guys.
No, we don't.
No? Okay, we'll just skip the topic. Never mind. We thought we had news, but it's gone. I'm just a bit annoyed with them right now. It's not like we can do anything about it, so, you know.
Well, yes, you can. You can complain about it, which is what you're doing.
Yeah, it doesn't have any function, ultimately, though.
Or it's called Welcome to the Internet.
Well, yes.
Oh, don't worry. There will be some post-production, shall we say.
Yeah, I hope so.
And by post-production, Dan means the entire thing is going to be read off in auto-tune to each of our voices.
Oh, my God. No auto-tune.
Don't worry, Candace. I will not do that. I am not Phil.
Come on. Even I wouldn't do that to our listeners. I like having listeners.
Dan can edit this later.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I had to come up with another segue.
Yeah, this is awesome. How many times can we force Dan to segue?
That's two segues for the price of one topic, but anyway.
I think we should have Dan write an actual segue.
You want a picture of me writing a segue, Phil? Oh, gee, I had no idea you...
No,
anyway.
I want a video of you writing a segue.
And that could be the video you use on YouTube when we change topics.
Yes.
It's going to be a very short video, too.
Speaking of going out of clip, because we're getting towards the end of the show. Oh, a third segue. Oh, my gosh. I am just...
You've got a whole fleet of segues there.
I do. I absolutely do.
Record date sorted 2013. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.